Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Open Observability Talks. I'm Dotan Horvitz, and here at Open Observability Talks, we talk about anything DevOps, observability, and open source. So, may the open source be with you. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Logs.io, the cloud-native observability platform. Logs.io takes the best-of-breed open-source projects such as Prometheus, OpenSearch, and Jaeger, and offers them as a unified observability platform built for scale. We had a few sound issues in the recording for this episode, so apologies in advance for any hiccups on this episode, and I'm sure you'll still find it as splendid as always. And with that, let's move on to today's episode.
One of the most fascinating new projects in the CNCF is Backstage, which was born as an internal tool at Spotify. And this open source project gained immense traction and today has around 25,000 or more stars on GitHub. Last I checked, 4,000 forks, 4 million, over 4 million developers using Backstage, and more than 1,000 organizations that adopted it. Today, I'm glad to talk to with Lee Mills, the senior engineering manager at Spotify, leading the Backstage engineering, to learn more about this project. Let's invite Lee to the stream. Hey, Lee, how's it going?
Very well, thanks, Dotan, for having me.
Great having you here. Backstage started as an internal tool to answer needs for Spotify's engineering team, right? So can you tell us about that need, like the initiators even before the open source days, everything else?
The number of services we had was growing at an exponential rate. Finding what was already pre-existing became extremely difficult. So what you found was, as teams are trying to move fast, we need, some kind of authentication service or something. And because there was no way to easily discover in a company that, you know, like with 4,000 other engineers, it's hard to find, you know, like, maybe somebody's built this somewhere else. Instead, it's a case of, I need this now, I'm going to build it, let's go. And you'll quickly put something together, you'll set off and you'll meet the needs of your customers. What that caused was incredible amounts of duplication. It caused a diversification in the way that people were building software. So if ever you move from team to team, it became difficult to transfer across. There was a cognitive load that was inherent with it all. And this is where Backstage came into play. Originally started out as, I suppose you could say, most akin to the software catalog within Backstage. It was an inventory service, identified all the services that we had and who owned them. And that was at the time, the start and the end of the goal. It was, how do we make this stuff discoverable? Effectively. And what we found as we started to kind of solve this problem and get teams on board, tools around these services started to pop up. So now that people could find services and teams realized this, it was like, okay, we can, share a link to this tool that we have that might help people onboard with this service or manage this service or, you know, that type of thing. So that really became the next thing that we saw. It wasn't the original intent, but it became the next thing. And that slowly evolved into today what we have as plugins. And that was kind of like the start. The other part to this was, as we started to realize people were interested, people were going to this service, people were going to see what we had, people were starting to organically build tools around these services, we realized things were scattered. So we had this central place of an inventory, but then we had 500 different places with tools. We kind of replaced the service duplication and the service problem with now the service part itself, but now we've got a tools thing. And you've got to, as an engineer, you've got to remember where all of these things are and, you know, all these different browser tabs that you had to have. And that's where the single pane of glass idea came in. And that's really where Backstage kind of started to take shape. It was no longer just an inventory, it became how do we surface context, if you will, and the needs of the engineers in a single place. So kind of connecting the dots, if you will, between all of those different elements. And that's where we started. And yeah, it kind of grew and got out of control from there, really.
So essentially, it's like an inventory, and then, as you said, the tooling, and maybe a very important thing that is also, I think, in Backstage, the user journey, right? It's not just a random collection of tools. There's, as you said, the place to connect the dots, which makes the difference, I think, with Backstage.
Absolutely. And we quite often get asked, how, you know, like people considering to adopt Backstage, how do we get more Spotify's guys? You know, Spotify's got this Backstage environment.
We have over like 200 plugins in there. We have all of this documentation, all of this information. And my response to that usually is, you don't want what Spotify's got. You want what kind of, first, what you want to do is identify the need. And then you want the right plugins, not all 200 of them. You want the right plugins and the right connections to make sure you can solve that user journey.
To solve that problem.
Yeah.
And that's the magic. It's like, it's not the fact that it's extensible with all the plugins. Well, that's great. And, you know, it is chasing in the
way that we work, but it's not the answer. The answer is that connective tissue, if you will, that journey.
Yeah. I used to be in past lives, I used to be a product manager. So I definitely am in favor of this. First, start with the problems that you need to solve. Don't copy paste what Google or Netflix, or with all due respect, Spotify had, because they solved their problem. So you can take inspiration, you can use platforms, but ultimately it's your user journey that you need to characterize, identify, and then break down into the individual pieces, and then see what you can reuse off the shelf, what you can build your own. With your plugin architecture, obviously it makes things much more convenient. It also, it rings a bell to a large extent, like platform engineering. Actually, I had an episode here on Open Observability Talks about platform engineering with director of platform engineering at Citrix a while back. It was a fascinating episode. Maybe I'll paste the link to that on the chat soon. But how do you see Backstage mapping to platform engineering as a discipline?
So Backstage is Spotify was in the platform mission. It's in our platform engineering domain, right?
And we see it very much as a tool to support the rest of the engineering mission to deliver their needs, their goals. And for the longest time, we're kind of there, kind of under the hood, kind of taking care of the plumbing, if you will. Where Backstage changes that is, it's kind of twofold. One, from an engineering perspective, it gives me the things I need relatively easily in a nice UI, something that I can see, and kind of brings it to the forefront a little bit so that I'm thinking about it. It's not just a, you know, oh, I need to do this at the end. Like it's part, it becomes more part of my flow, if you will. So from an engineering perspective, you've got that side of it. You've also got the side of, we're trying to provide tools to make it easy for kind of like the end using engineers to be able to do some platform engineering. An example, I do not know properly how to configure Kubernetes clusters and things like this. I totally can. I can go and do it. It's going to take me time though. Like it's something I'm going to have to go and refresh. There is a level of complexity there. So within Backstage, we have the Kubernetes plugin. And that Kubernetes plugin is owned by the expert. It's owned by the team that manage Kubernetes at Spotify. And what they do is they surface information and tools that is easier for me to quickly jump into, to manage things, to investigate things, so on and so forth. So it kind of takes away some of that context switching and removes some of that cognitive load. So I can go and focus on my end users. The other thing it does, I think, for Backstage, when it comes to adopters, is it elevates or exposes the need around platform engineering. So platform engineering, in many instances, is core to the things that we're doing, but it's not really visible. The what Backstage does, it almost kind of simplifies it so you can have that conversation with your stakeholders about platform engineering and the needs, and quickly evidence the velocity gain that you can get by using tools like Backstage or things.
And what I like that you describe the central platform engineering team and then the arms within the specific product teams or engineering teams that implement that on their side where they know the subject matter that they need to implement for their sake. So a complementary motion, the centralized and the distributed one to get the right plugins in place and implementation, which is great. We mentioned a few of the components. You already mentioned the catalog from the early days even, and then the plugin. So let's take a step back and do you want to tell us what the main capabilities, main pieces of Backstage are?
Sure. And we've had about a couple of years to try and get this right, so hopefully I can do it. So the first thing is when people look at Backstage, when they ask what is it new, and you look at the list of plugins that are up on Backstage.io
or what's going on in the community, it does a lot. So what we try and do when we talk about it is break it down into kind of like the key functions. And for us, that is create, manage, and explore. So from the create perspective, we have a tool called Software Templates. That allows you to quickly spool up services or components and build in, this is going to sound really dull, but build in things like standards. So one thing that we found as we started to align around these are all of our services, the next thing that kind of, and these tools started to come up, the next thing we started to think about at Spotify was how do we align around best practices and things like this. We have to, you know, keep in mind things like GDPR, ITGC, security requirements, all of these bits and pieces. And then, of course when you go to build a service or component, there's 50 different ways to do that as well. And the way that we tackled that was twofold. One was around kind of documentation and what we call golden paths. So these are kind of like the recommended path you can take to build a service. And you mentioned guilds before. That's where we have like our backend guild owns the backend golden path as an example. So there's documentation, and then there was the templates. And with the templates, it became apparent that we needed somewhere where we could build in the latest security requirements, so our security org could get engaged there and build that layer in. We needed things like GDPR, so on and so forth. And then we have a technical architecture group that helps us define, like, you know, this is the our recommended way. Doesn't mean you have to go that way, but it's our recommended. And in Backstage, that services through these templates and through this documentation. We have about 50 plus different templates now in Backstage at Spotify. And again, similar to the plugins, they're owned by the experts. So if I have a template based around Kubernetes, it's going to be the Kubernetes people that are doing that. So that's the create part. Really extensible, follows all the Backstage beliefs around kind of the ownership and kind of distributing where that needs to be. Next was manage. That's our catalog. Again, going back to the inventory story, effectively that's it. It's how do we kind of have this inventory of things that I own, things that the company has, and then wrapping that with the metadata and kind of the way it visualizes into Backstage is I can go and look at any service. Let's be meta. I'm going to go and look at the Backstage front end service in Backstage, and it'll give me this visual of a bit of information, a bit of metadata around my service, and then also all of the different plugins that are related or used, can be used on my service, in context. So it's keeping you in that context. It's keeping you in what you're looking at, but able to surface it all because of this connective tissue, which is the catalog. And then explore is the discoverability angle. I want to be able to search for things. I want to be able to find relevant documentation to the thing that I'm looking at. Again, staying in context. I want to be able to explore Stack Overflow questions as an example related to the things that I'm looking at. I want to be able to go and see the CI/CD for the service as I've just pushed some changes out and I want to see it go through the pipeline. So that's the way we kind of boil it down to its very, very basic. Create, manage, and explore. And we do that through templates, catalog, and then the ever-expanding plugin ecosystem with things like TechDocs and CI/CD Jenkins, so on and so forth in there.
Sounds good, and definitely aligned with what I see, especially in large organizations where the platform engineering teams really service massive amounts of business units and groups and different needs, almost like small companies within the larger organization. And being able to maneuver all of these is definitely the core. I think the next step, and that was, I guess, the most interesting part, was that you decided to open source it, you as in Spotify, and it's now excitedly part of the CNCF. It's now already in the incubation of the CNCF after moving away from the sandbox. So it's really exciting. And, you know, the question begs itself, why were we open source in the first place? I know now it's a success, so in retrospect, it's hindsight, it's easy, but back in the day, can you share with us the motion there?
Yeah, of course. And it wasn't a clean-cut answer.
Yes, let's go and do that initially.
There was a fair amount of discussion back and forth around whether we should or whether we shouldn't. And it was the discussion... You know, it levied around, we're a small team. We have internal customers that we need to support. Can we still continue to support them and open source? Like, what is the big benefit that is coming from open source that's going to push us to, you know, like tip the scales in that way? But the way that it came about, there was a demo that one of our directors at the time was giving at one of the Google conferences. And I can't remember the particular products, but he was asked about, hey, can we take a look at this product that Spotify has been thinking about or that's building? So to do that, you know, like as we do with most things in Spotify services, if we want to show it, we'll open Backstage, go to the service, and, you know, you can have a look at the data and so on and so forth. And he came back from that conference with effectively the news that, yeah, it was great. And when I was showing it to like these other people and these other execs, et cetera, they were more interested in like the frame, if you will. They were more interested in Backstage than the actual product that we were trying to that he was trying to demo. And the reason was they were having similar pains. When you start to grow to a certain scale, the number of services become more than what you can fit in your head, and it becomes very difficult to manage that across a growing number of people. So that was the initial kind of, oh, maybe we've got something here that other people are struggling with. And at the time, there was a little bit of a discussion around how can we be more present as an engineering focused kind of company, if you will, than what we have been. If you said to people, hey, I work at Spotify, typically you got, if it was, you know, if it's my mum and dad, you got, oh, that's the music people, right? But if it's other engineers and things like that, then you may, you know, the other thing that you would hear was, oh yeah, guilds and tribes. And, you know, we were known for like the organizational side of stuff, and less so about, you know, some of the engineering and some of the engineering challenges that we were doing. So there was interest in it from a, hey, we can expose that side of ourselves a little bit, and possibly help a few people on the way. You know, maybe other organizations of having these same pain points that we've kind of been solving for. So we went out and we tried to validate that. And the more and more we asked, we went and met with CNCF end users, CNCF themselves, a bunch of different people out there. And what we quickly learned was, oh yeah, this is actually it's not just a problem for a couple of people. This is, you know, like the house is on fire and everyone's kind of sat there going, yeah, this is a problem. kind of thing. So that kind of validated that side of things. The other aspects, of course, there were other aspects to it. You know, we had at the time under 10 engineers focused on Backstage. There was potential to have a huge open source community of passionate people focused on Backstage. So there was also this kind of discussion around, hey, you know, like from a perspectives standpoint and from an expertise standpoint, there's a way we can bring more people into this, if you will, from the selfish aspect.
But playing the devil's advocate, you know, it is, it bears some cost to take something and open source it. The velocity that you can move when you're only dependent on yourself, whereas having to have cycles, the actual, the runoff to move it to the open source, that's an effort. And then the ongoing is slower. So I'm wondering, probably the engineering, like such as yourself and your team understood it more intuitively, but I'm curious about executive management that sees things in a more business-oriented, financial-oriented thing. How did they digest this notion?
Thankfully, I didn't have to be in many of those early discussions at that level. But there was definite concern that we were going to stop, that we were going to slow down. There was a definite kind of concern that we were not going to be able to innovate for a while as we focused into open source. And of course, there's the you know, we were effectively saying, let's take these two teams, let's try it, let's invest, let's get something out into the open source. And if you boil that all the way down to the context, what we were saying is, we're going to dedicate these teams into open source and you're going to be paying for this. You know, like the obviously it comes with a cost, but we believe that we're going to get this audience. We believe we're going to be able to kind of capture a corner of this market and say we're having an impact and hopefully get this virtuous cycle going of where we've got kind of information and things coming in and so on and so forth.
And you had that sprint that you did during the Hack Week that allowed you to do the quick POC to prove your point, right?
Exactly. We Spotify has a yearly Hack Week, and at the time, as all of these discussions were going on, hey, should we open source? Should we not? A group of engineers, some from the backstage team themselves, others from across the company, got together and said, "Can we open source this in a how far can we get in a week?" And we actually, in over the course of a week, that group of engineers produced a front-end version, if you will, only. So it was missing a lot of stuff that we have on the internal. To be honest, there's still a lot of things that we have kind of in various different plugins and things internally that aren't out into the open source just yet. But they were able to produce enough that was disconnected from the Spotify infrastructure, because not everybody wants a playlist plugin, as an example. And that was clean enough that we could probably ship this. And they did that in a week. And the Hack Weeks are judged by senior leadership at Spotify. You know, like you get a various different groups coming through and you have a winner. And at the time, we came third in this Hack Week. At the time, for a platform engineering thing, that was pretty unheard of.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. But it was just enough to kind of say, hey, we can do something in a short time and see what happens. We had all of these other plans. We were going to like open source 9 months later. And I was told that was a bit of a silly idea by somebody very close to the CNCF. So we brought it all forward. So we did this. The Hack Week was, we were thinking about open sourcing in like November, December of 2019. The Hack Week, we did a bunch of going meeting with people. The Hack Week was in February. And our plan was launch in September with something that's polished and perfect and so on and so forth. Got told that was a silly idea.
So we brought...
There's no perfect in open source. I get it in the hands of the users and then, you know, they give you the feedback and start moving forward.
And this is the thing I learned. We launched it in March with the intent of, let's build it in the open. Like, wait, this is not rent, but let's build it still. And we launched it. We launched it on Monday morning. It was actually the first Monday morning that we were all working remote, because it was the start of kind of pandemic and then times, if you will, even in Sweden at that point. So we did it all remote. Launched it on the Monday. Came back on that Tuesday, and we were trending for Hackathon. We were trending for GitHub already. We had a ton of commentary on Hackathon, and to be honest, it wasn't all good. And that kind of pushed us into,
we need to release a broad blog post. What is this? You know, why is it here? Because a lot of it was, we've released this thing. It does all of this stuff. We haven't worked out how we can talk about it cleanly yet. And that was the start. And to be honest, from there to here, like, every time we pass a milestone, we recently passed 1,000 contributors in the past couple of months.
It's one of those. Oh, really? We've been able. Like, this is the impact. This is, yeah.
And you also told me an amazing story about that. I guess was also a good proof point to the higher management about the impact that once you have the contribution with the dark mode. You want to share that story? That's an amazing crystal clear story about the benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were lucky.
We had, in proving it out to, you know, like, this is a viable thing, we were extremely, no, we weren't lucky. We had a great idea. And people saw that and quickly kind of turned around, like, all the trending on Hacker News, the interest from the CNCF, all of that stuff. But the one of the things that really crystallized it was, for quite a few years, we'd been asked about dark mode in Backstage. Sounds silly. But, you know, like, I run everything in light. I probably burn my eyeballs and but a lot of the engineering community prefer dark mode. And we've been asked for years, but it never really been prioritized. There was always things that, you know, we want to solve. I don't know. We want to solve the search problem. We want to solve the discoverability piece. We want to solve X, Y, and Z. So dark mode was always there, but it was always pushed down the list. And what we realized when we'd open source, right, we've got this community, let's see. And even early doors, the community was really, really active and passionate. It was great. So let's see, you know, like, let's be transparent about what we want to do. And we made a decision that we were going to do everything in the open. If we have an idea, we'll write an RFC in the open, let people comment on it, things like that. So we put together this PRFC. We got one of our designers to basically scamp together a few screenshots of the Backstage instance in dark mode, told people what we were looking for, and we posted this PRFC. Within 24 hours, somebody had picked up that RFC. They'd looked at what the designer, visuals help, right? Pretty pictures goes a long way. They looked at what we'd proposed, and within 24 hours had submitted a PR back to the project with dark mode. And it was something that we could consume internally as well. This was like the first point where it was like, I'm not going to swear, but I would normally swear at this point.
Oh, we've built this and we put it out, something we've been waiting for years.
And the community just turned it around in 24 hours.
Without you having to invest engineering of your own, the community contributed and it's immediately effective for internally also for Spotify engineering.
It hit and it just shows the old.
Again, a little bit selfish, but from a selfish perspective, it went a long way to show that we can collaborate with this community and we can you know, build on all of their ideas. It's not always smooth. Managing a community is hard work. We don't always all agree, but slowly over time, we build, you know, we've got special interest groups. We've got a community session. There's actually one this afternoon. Like, we have... nurtured or try to nurture and guide this community as much as we can because of all of these benefits.
Yeah. You need to plug in someone guarding, maybe made it, or at least these lead stuff steps.
Yeah, that's the beauty of open source, definitely. And every time I hear these stories, tears come to my eyes, really. This is open source in its best, the ability to see that. And it's astonishing every time anew. And also another thing that is very amazing about the open source and the beauty is that once it's out there, it takes a life of its own also in terms of the use cases. Like last month at KubeCon Europe in Amsterdam, I met folks from Lunar who had also delivered a talk about using Backstage for embedding, you know, compliance throughout their entire development life cycle, something like that. So that's definitely, from what you say, it's not exactly a use case that you foreseen, right?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I mean, we really see also the Lunar
is an incredibly technology first bank, if you will, when you come to it. So I'm not surprised they're doing really exciting stuff with Backstage. Banking in general is a little bit of a surprise to me. Like, banking is can be. I don't want to say it about the entire thing, but it can be quite slow. It's very historical. There's a lot of regulations they need to follow and things like that. And it turns out Backstage has been an easy way for a lot of the banking sector to try something technology anew. They've oftentimes, the feedback I get is they've often tried to do something, bring a new technology in, but then it changes all of like the underlying infrastructure. And that's hard. That is very hard to get signed off in a bank where, you know, like compliance and regulatory things are involved. Backstage gives an opportunity where they've almost got like this window that they can then connect into everything and try different stuff and see things through there. So surprisingly, banking has been one of the quickest growing sectors, I think, with Backstage.
And a different use case than I ever thought of.
Yeah, and you gave before the example about healthcare and the lung cancer thing. That amazing that it takes really a life of its own, an open source project. I want to ask another thing. You mentioned the rich plugin ecosystem and maybe even sort of an early marketplace thing. And I know that Spotify released recently commercial plugins into the wild, and with a statement that this is something that you're going to explore. Can you explain a bit this motion? We know it's one thing to, as you said, to contribute an open source to enhance your engineering or extend it, but making money off of it is a different way. And we all think about Spotify making money out of the music. Can you tell us a bit about this motion?
For sure. I'm going to be transparent.
I'm going to have your best answers here because I am focused on the open source side of stuff. Like that is literally my role is I look after the open source community, the open source strategy, and that side of stuff. But what we saw or what we see is kind of twofold. We can provide this developer portal. We can provide Backstage and all of the stuff that's in there. And that's always going to be open source. That's like, it's there, it's not going anywhere. And it's going to continue to kind of grow and get enhancements and so on and so forth. So we can kind of give people that framework. The second thing people tended to ask after they've asked, hey, we want what Spotify's got, is like, how can we learn from what Spotify has done? We've had 6-7 years of doing Backstage and trying to solve these things. How can we get more of Spotify's opinions? How can we get more of Spotify's expertise? And how can that help us solve for the things that we're trying to do? So this is where the like at the moment, the commercial bundle, the commercial plugins have kind of come in. They are kind of battle hardened, if you will, plugins that we've used at Spotify for quite a few years. They are very, very opinionated. You know, they believe, if you will, in the Spotify way of working and the Spotify way of solving problems. And it's a way that we could totally have shipped them as independent things. But we thought if we've already got a community of people that are using Backstage, this is something that is separate to Backstage, if you will, that can be built atop of. And then if people are interested in, hey, we want to, like, we've got Backstage solving all of these problems, or, you know, we've got these great community plugins, but we're looking for this opinionation. We're looking for some of this, like, Spotify magic, if you will, to kind of sprinkle on top. And that's where the commercial side of things kind of came up. That's where it's like, hey, we can offer not just Backstage, but we can offer our opinions, our expertise, our learnings from, you know, the past so many years.
So is that a view of Spotify engineering in a way also becoming a software vendor in a sense? Because this is externalizing in a way of best practices and blogs and patterns is one thing, but externalizing as a billable commercial element that people... So this is sort of a shift of mind shift for Spotify. I'm just curious if this is something that you're exploring, or is that how does that map to the business plan?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Spotify, not by the way, right? It's not going away as an audio audience.
I hope so. My podcast is there, so keep it clean.
It's definitely not.
But we also wanted to explore what other opportunities are there out there. You know, if we look at one example would be Amazon and AWS. That was tooling that was built for Amazon to operate at their scale. And then suddenly they realized, hey, maybe other people will want this. And now like 60-70% of the internet runs on AWS. So it was it's a similar kind of mindset at Spotify. It's yes, we are dedicated, of course, we are an audio company. But That doesn't mean we can't explore and share the expertise that we've got. And I think the way that we're approaching it now, yes, right now it is, here's Spotify's kind of like, as a vendor, offering these plugins, our ideas and learnings atop of Backstage. We're going to grow that, I think, and we're going to start to see others coming into that space. There's already quite a few companies built around Backstage externally. And I to me, that is, it's fantastic. We're giving, not only are we giving this framework and trying to support our original plan, support engineers, reduce cognitive load, you know, like help us and help other engineers be better and to do things without as much of that pain. All of a sudden, we're enabling other businesses. We're enabling others who have these skill sets that maybe they've, you know, they've had an idea, but they haven't had a way to bring it to market. Well, now there's this platform. There's other SaaS providers for Backstage. We're now introducing these plugins, and we expect other people to do similar kind of things around plugins. So we hope we can continue to grow and build the open source community and that side, and make that an even better product over time. But then also enable this new market of, you know, maybe bringing kind of productivity engineering and things like that to light for people as well.
That sounds amazing, and definitely sounds like you have great expertise within the organization. I'm sure that you can contribute quite a bit in this domain and elevate the overall discussion in the community. We're about to run out of time, and I want to leave some time for the news, but it is important for me. I want to ask you, people who are interested to learn more about Backstage, maybe even to take part. You mentioned a few things. So I already shared here on the chat, and it will be on the show notes for the podcast listeners, about the website for Backstage and the GitHub. But you mentioned also calls and everything. Can you tell us where people can find you and how?
Absolutely. So if you go to backstage.io, that has a bunch of links out and various different. We have a Discord community that's incredibly active. You will find all the introductions
and documentation around Backstage on there as well. Discord, as I say, there's also a series of community sessions. If you go to the Backstage/community hub on GitHub, you will see the agendas and the upcoming dates and invites for three sessions. We have a community session that is today at 3 p.m. UK, so 4 p.m. Rest of Europe. We have special interest group that meet a couple of times a month around adoption and around the catalog specifically. And then you'll find us at various different conferences and bits and pieces. We're at GoTo next week in Denmark. If anybody is going to be there, you'll be able to find me. And obviously things like KubeCon coming up and stuff like that. But GitHub, go to backstage/community. Backstage.io, and you'll find us on Discord as well.
Sounds good. And where can they follow you personally? I know you're not on Twitter, but where else?
On Twitter, but you can find me on LinkedIn. So you can also find me on Mastodon, and I will be able to tell you some more of my username is on there. Like the path VM and Mastodon the social. Otherwise, it's LinkedIn, or you'll find me out on the Backstage list.
Sandy, you also probably have a Slack channel on the CNCF Slack, right? For Backstage, or a few of them.
Yeah, we're also a partner on the CNCF Slack, as you can find us there, to set.
Sounds good. So thanks a lot with that, and I would like you to invite you to stay with me for the next section on the breaking news.
Soft shot.
And many of these news are about the KubeCon last month. I know that I reported some live off the show floor, but after digesting all this eventful week, just to summarize, record-breaking KubeCon with over 10,000 attendees, which is astonishing. And even more astonishing to me, at least, was that 60% of them were first-time attendees at KubeCon. Which is astonishing, and many of them are still learning what cloud native is about. And that's important to remember for all of us, because we're already in the cutting edge of things and how to already run, I don't know, multi-cluster Kubernetes things and then GitOps flows and stuff. And some people are still figuring their first step. So I think it's something very important to bear in mind. Another thing that was announced at KubeCon was another bunch of cloud native ambassadors, 155 new ambassadors for the CNCF. I'm honored to be one of them. Really exciting KubeCon there. And the ambassadors serve as advocates for the cloud native ecosystem and help further the mission of open source innovation and making cloud native ubiquitous. So if you are also an active advocate in any capacity, do know that you can submit your candidacy also for the next batch, something very exciting, this program, revamped program. And going more to the technical side of the of things, on the Prometheus front, finally, the popular Prometheus Remote Write protocol for transmitting metrics data is standardized. So the official Remote Write 1.0 specification is now public. I'm going to paste the link here for those who are interested. For Prometheus users, that's one very important announcement. There's also a very good blog post by Bartholomew Plotka about this, the Google group for that. I'll put that as well. That's on the on this front. And of course, keep an eye on out for the formal IETF open standard. That's going to be very interesting to see that as a formal standard, not just open specification. Another note about specifications, lots of activity around specifications. This KubeCon is sunsetting Open Census. Open Telemetry was born, for those who remember, out of a merge of Open Census and Open Tracing, open specifications. And now, finally, Open Telemetry has reached feature parity with Open Census. It supports, looking at my lists, C++, .NET, Go, Java, JavaScript, PHP, and Python. Probably maybe the list has grown since I wrote it down. Obviously, OpenTelemetry offers even a richer ecosystem of instrumentation libraries and exporters, and of course, the active open source community around OpenTelemetry that we talk about a lot here at the podcast. So that's one very important thing, especially for those who still use Open Census. Please bear in mind, and this is the time to switch over. One more note about open standards and open specifications is ECS, Elastic Common Schema, that has merged, or the agreement to merge it into OpenTelemetry logs specification. And that's, again, a very exciting news. It's a big step towards reducing competing standards and aligning the open source observability ecosystem around the common data model. And obviously Elasticsearch has been around for a long time with lots of expertise around log analytics, log management. So all the accumulated knowledge of that community brought into OpenTelemetry is definitely going to be a force multiplier. And a big thanks, obviously, to Elastic for this generous contribution. Another note about logs in general, I think I saw at KubeCon that the general notion is to progress to stabilize logs in OpenTelemetry. There's a move towards logs API and SDK stabilization. The log bridge specification is was merged, and there's a work to split the specification from the semantic convention so that we can stabilize the specification while still working on the on the other piece and merging ECS and so on. I'll paste that here as well. I'll pause here actually. Lee, are you, what's your feel about open standards and in general and these motions that we see in the open source community?
I mean, it sounds particularly like the open telemetry piece. That's been invaluable even as we started to kind of dive into that side of it. So it's only a good thing. But as with all of open source, it takes a little bit of a while for the things to kind of mature to the right place. But I like the fact that the community kind of getting together around all of my stuff, particularly around the route. So it's only good in my eyes.
Yeah. And in general, you mentioned the OpenTelemetry. Of course, I think lots of buzz around the OpenTelemetry at KubeCon. And also last week, I mentioned that there was a London for WTF ESRE and DevOps UK conferences. And I think both of them, Autel, kept coming up. Several talks showed its capabilities, the new demo environment. I even discovered myself new things like new integrations, like the IBM folks shared the micro profile version 6 now supports OpenTelemetry traces, for example. That was new for me. So for those who are in the IBM Open Liberty ecosystem, very interesting. It's really something that I feel also outside of KubeCon and the CNCF native community, also other communities, along in the past weeks, it's definitely trending. Let's put it this way, alongside the backstage that I also mentioned, it was definitely mentioned several times. Going quickly over some other things, there was a Grafana 9.5 release with some improvements in Grafana alerting system. So check out the release notes. Obviously, as always on Grafana, you should note which update is available on the Grafana open source and which is only on the Grafana Labs commercial offering, but definitely worthwhile covering. With that, we're about to reach the top of the hour here. So that's all for today, for this episode of Open Observability Talks. Thanks again, Lee, for joining me on this episode.
Thank you for having me, Ali.
Thank you. And as always, all the episodes are available on your favorite podcast app, the Spotify, obviously, but also others, Apple, Google, and others, and also as a videocast format on YouTube. So check it out, Open Observability Talks. For those who are listening for that on demand, do know that we stream the episodes live on Twitch and YouTube. So if you want to join the live stream and chime in with your comments or whatnot, you can find all the details on our Twitter account at OpenObserve. So follow us for updates, to share comments, suggestions, news bits, and anything else. I'm Dotan Horvitz. Thank you very much for listening and see you on next month's episode. And as always, may the open source be with you.